Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Piercing the pre-dawn skies, the space shuttle announces its arrival at the launch site with its signature sound of twin sonic booms having gone subsonic for the last time. The pre-flare maneuver executed. Landing gear down and locked. Main gear touchdown. Hurley now deploying the drag chute. Ferguson rotating the nose gear down to the deck. Having fired the imagination of a generation, a ship like no other, its place in history secured, the space shuttle pulls into port for the last time. Its voyage at an end.
Yes, Obama should be congratulated for having given Russia the advantage they have been after for 50 years. The man will also live in history, but not in the history he thinks he will live in. Obama will live in infamy for what he has done to this nation. You know, I'm controlling my emotions for a number of reasons. The number one being, I'm in a state of disbelief that this man is committing such traitorous acts one after the other in plain sight. In plain sight, he destroys the space shuttle. The crown jewel of the American space program is destroyed by this community organizer, this communist con man, and there is no outcry in America. Am I the only person in the United States of America who understands that the man has put us at the back of the bus? He has now given Russia a clear advantage in space travel, in space technology, but most importantly in controlling space from the point of view of national security. He has destroyed us. From the point of view of national security, this communist street organizer, and I see him for what he is, I don't think I'm the only one. I can't be the only one, but then again, I ask myself, am I the only one? Because there should be a huge outcry in America, and I see nothing. Instead, I see the usual. I see the same Hollywood sluts cavorting with their underwear upside down on the streets of Sunset Boulevard, so to speak. I see the same stories about the poor, downtrodden, non-taxpaying welfare mother having a fistfight in a New York subway car and the baby rolling out of the subway car and so they can go home and collect their welfare check. I see the same story about the man in a striped suit hitting a ball out of a park, and I see no outrage about what this man has done to this country. I'm amazed. I'm amazed. I sit here and I cannot believe that history was made today. In a negative way, ending the space shuttle program, that we have a traitor in the White House, as clear as I'm standing here, overtly handing the baton to Russia, to China, to every nation that wants to destroy us, and not a word from the American vermin in the media. Not one peep from the little boys and girls trained like brainwashed robots in the schools of journalism, which have been teaching them to hate the country, to hate the white man, to hate the supremacy of this nation, and they come out and they say nothing. And it falls upon me. One man, Michael Savage. You know anybody else in talk radio who said a word about it today? Oh, they were talking about Republicans dead and Cantor is good and Reed is bad. I understand that's all true. But the big picture is the big picture. Obama has decimated the space industry for the United States of America. He's decimated 10,000 jobs in NASA. 10,000. Let's just take a point of view from jobs. Here is a liar from the gutters of Chicago put in by a gang that nobody even knows who the gang is. We only surmise the shadowy gang that controls the world. The shadowy gang that destroyed the economy to put this shyster into the White House. And now the man sits there and decimates the military, decimates the space program, decimates the American family. Let us go down the list together. I wrote the book, Trickle Up Poverty. A few hundred thousand of you bought it in hardcover. Hooray. Hooray. I can fill my gas tank and fill my guts. Hooray, hooray, hooray. You think that's why I wrote the book? Did I need to kill myself to write that book? Did I need to eat my guts out to write that book and put myself at further risk from the risk I'm already in? That the New World Order has recognized me for who I am? And they said, no, he will not talk freely. We'll smear him in England. We'll ban him in England. And God, hopefully, that will ban him on the American media. And we'll shut that guy up because he's the only one who knows what we're doing. At least he's the only one willing to say what we're doing. In such a forceful, clear way, we have to stop him. So let's smear him and let's make sure he can't go to the United Kingdom. Is that why I wrote Trickle Up Poverty? So that Obama could get away with this? The man should be impeached for this. If not for, let's say, at least three other crimes and misdemeanors, the man has decimated the space shuttle, given Russia the lead they've been after for 50 years, turned us into passengers on the Russian Soyuz spacecraft. He's put us at the back of the bus. Do you understand what I just said to you? We'll now be riding on the back of the bus to the space station. He's put us at the back of the bus because he hates this country. There's no other explanation. The man hates America. He and his first lady hate America. In their guts, they hate America. And yet they abuse the office of the White House. They trash the White House. They trash the presidency. They abuse the taxpayer with their excessive trips. Their feasts at the White House. They tell you to eat carrot cake, to eat carrots, and they're feasting on fatty foods. Disgusting cheeseburgers and french fries, and they tell you to eat carrots. And she gets away with it. He gets away with it. What are you afraid to say? What are the people afraid to say about Obama and why? What power does he have over you? You opened your big mouths in the media. You didn't shut your stinking mouths when Bush was president. You didn't shut your lousy left-wing pinko traps for 1 minute when Bush was in the White House. You didn't shut your yappers for a second. Every minute attacking him. And now not one word about Obama. You people with journalism degrees are the problem. You would have been very happy working for Joseph Stalin because you are no better than those who wrote Pravda or Izvestia. You wrote Pravda in this country for Obama now for 2 years now. Pravda, 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 the truth. The truth, Obama's truth, the Democrat socialist truth. The taxpayers of America are no good. The business people of America are greedy. Shall I go down the list? You know, there was a class of people in the Soviet Union called the kulaks. Who were the kulaks? They were farmers who sold their produce on the open market. They raised wheat, and they raised rye, and they raised oats. They raised apples, and they raised cabbages. And they sold their produce on the open market. And they were known as the kulaks. And they made a small living. Some of them made a good living, but most of them were small farmers. And Joseph Stalin declared them the enemy of the new Soviet Union. He said they are the greedy capitalists. They are why there is hunger in the Soviet Union. And so he nationalized or collectivized the Soviet farms. And he arrested or killed most of the farmers because they were the evil ones in the animal farm of the Soviet Union, the Union of Soviet the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And now we have a president who attacks the middle class in virtually every speech. He calls you greedy. He makes you embarrassed if you make a living and you buy a few things for yourself and your children and have the nerve and audacity to put some away for tomorrow. Because you see, the people he supports, the people he likes, are A, the greediest people that the world has ever seen, the hedge fund operators who are running like pirates, with scarabs, running wild with no controls. They should have been reined in from day one. They should have been imprisoned and their assets seized for what they did to this country. But they're still doing it. I wrote about it in Trickle Up Poverty. They have names. They have organizations. The Managed Funds Association is their lobbying group. They're still giving Obama millions and millions of dollars. So he loves those people. And who else does he love? The non-tax-paying, non-working leech. The non-taxpaying, non-working leech. You know, I walked in San Francisco the other day, and I saw one homeless, filthy bum after another, scratching himself, rolling around in the grass, defecating behind bushes. I had no compassion for them. I have lived with these human parasites for so many years that I have no compassion. Why? Because the city spends hundreds of millions of dollars on these bums, and it goes right up their nose or right down their gullets. Either they drink themselves into the gutter or they snort themselves into the gutter, and you got people begging them to see what they can do for them next. Where did the hundreds of millions of dollars get us for the homeless services? Nothing. Again, liberalism is a mental disorder. Here in San Francisco, a parolee is out. The cops are looking for him in San Francisco because he was pimping a 14-year-old girl. The cops try to arrest him. He pulls out a gun and shoots the cops. And the black neighborhood, the Bayview Hunters Point District, goes ballistic. That's what the civil rights movement was for, to support gangbanging and drug dealers. This is the city. This is the country that we have inherited. And at the same time, on a macro level, Barack Hussein Obama, who ought to hang his head in shame. But the problem is, he is not ashamed. He's very proud, because those who put him in power want him to do these things. They wanted us in the back of the bus. They wanted the Soviets to be the supreme leader in space. They wanted the Chinese currency to take over the world currency. Don't you understand what's going on in front of your eyes? I'll be right back.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the earth. No single space project in this period will be more impressive to mankind or more important for the long-range exploration of space.
That was JFK, who was a Democrat. But by today's standards, a Democrat of that era would be a right-winger today compared to the communists in the Democrat Party and the wobbly pinkos in the Republican Party. President Kennedy said, "We accept the challenge to go to the moon, not because it will be easy, but because it will be hard." Now, that was a great president. And he gave me, and he gave millions of school children, a vision that one day maybe they could be an astronaut, or if not an astronaut, they could work as an engineer, an aeronautical engineer, or a physicist of some kind. Kennedy created a fabulous reason for young men to go to college to become engineers and scientists and maybe one day achieve the great honor of working for NASA. And ladies and gentlemen, it's gone from Kennedy to Obama, from the Alpha to the Omega, from a Democrat to a communist in your time, and there's no outcry in America. I don't think most people understand what's just happened to them today. Today is a day that you'll live in infamy. In some ways, what Obama has done to NASA, which, by the way, started under Bush, incidentally, and I'm aware of that. In some ways, today is a greater disaster for America than Pearl Harbor was. Not certainly in the loss of life, but in the loss of military advantage, in the loss of prestige, in the loss of inspiration for the next generation, in the loss of 10,000 jobs, and yet there's no outcry in America. It's utterly unbelievable to me how he gets away with this, how there's no thing. And I've never seen anything like it. Like a dumb white middle class that says nothing. No outrage, nothing. Where's the outrage? The cops shoot a pimp who shot at them in a ghetto, to use an old word, in San Francisco, and the community goes wild. The community gets wild over a guy who shoots at a cop. How dare the cops do their job and defend the community? They go, they riot, they burn down a station. Here the man burns down NASA, basically. Destroys, decimates 10,000 jobs, and there's not a word in the United States of America over this. The only American politician who said anything today was Governor Perry, Rick Perry of Texas. He said, The Obama administration has left American astronauts with no alternative but to hitchhike into space. I will go a step further and say that Obama has purposely put us at the back of the space shuttle. The last seat on the space shuttle will be reserved for the American astronaut. He's put us on the back of the bus, in other words, into space. I know that's a powerful metaphor, but you see, if I were a cartoonist as opposed to being a verbal polemicist, for want of a better description right now, after all, talk radio is about polemics. The thing is that if you back up your verbal polemics with books that are brilliant and researched properly, then you see that there's much more to an individual than just polemics. But there's nothing wrong with polemics if it gets the individual's attention. I then back it up with one book after another. It's like batting out of the Yankee Stadium. It's like, you know, one book after the other, researched. I don't just put out a book with white pages and then nothing inside without. These are real books with real meaning. With real references, details. So when I detailed to you that Obama was destroying the military and destroying NASA, I meant every word, and I backed it up with data. So now he's done it. He's achieved his end. His controllers in Moscow gave him a pat on the back for being a good, good man. He did a good job. He has put us on the back of the bus. He has given Russia what they've wanted for 50 years, and they boasted about it today. Today they boasted. They said it's the age of Soyuz. What do you think the Russians were saying? They were saying they won. They congratulated themselves. I don't blame them. I'd congratulate us, too, if we had achieved such a victory in our lifetime. I would also congratulate America if we had achieved a victory like that, if I were the president or the leader of one of the space agencies. I don't blame the Russians for being self-satisfied in having achieved what they've always wanted ever since World War II. But how he gets away with it is the question. The answer is simple. The vermin in the media. The communists in the media, the wobblies in the media, the fellow travelers in the media, the drug addicts in the media, the brainwashed masses who are allowed into journalism school. But most importantly, it's because of the stupid masses in America, the pie holes walking around with shoes. Where do you want to eat tonight? You want Indian? You want Chinese? Let's sit over there. I walk around San Francisco. I mean, I don't blame the people, but I basically what I see, I have contempt for humanity at the end of the day. There's something wrong with me. I admit it. When I see people sitting with fat stomachs, drinking wine, all races, it's not, it doesn't matter what the race is, tourists, Americans, all the same. Let's have another wine, let's have another Cosmo, let's have another clam, let's have another shrimp. Look at them. Take a look at them. No different than pigs at a trough.
Savage.
Mission complete, Houston. After serving the world for over 30 years, the space shuttle's earned its place in history, and it's come to a final stop. You know, the space shuttle's changed the way we view the world, and it's changed the way we view our universe. It's a lot of emotion today, but one thing's indisputable. America's not going to stop exploring. Thank you, Columbia, Challenger, Discovery, Endeavor, and our ship Atlantis. Thank you for protecting us and bringing this program to such a fitting end. God bless all of you. God bless the United States of America.
You just heard the voice of Captain Chris Ferguson, who was the pilot of the shuttle, the last shuttle under Barack Hussein Obama, who's put it out of business and put a closed forever sign on NASA, decimated 10,000 jobs. You're living through history, whether you know it or not. Today is a day that shall live in infamy for those of us who know what's going on. And pardon me for being too Bruegel and too George Gross in the last segment, but... There is a part of me that's very much like Bruegel, walking around looking at the overly large individuals consuming too much food and drink. George Gross, of course, had the right idea in the 1920s with his German compatriots, painting them as he did. And I don't think he was condemned for doing so. In fact, his paintings live as masterpieces, as do Bruegel's paintings live as masterpieces. And I, on talk radio, must tell you that verbally, there's a little bit of Bruegel and a little bit of George Gross in me. When I look at what's going on amongst the masses, I can see how the communist in the White House gets away with it. They don't care. They stuff their pie holes, and he gets away with pushing the agenda of the radical left. You know, it's as though Jesse Jackson really won the presidency. They just found a smoother operator than Jackson to push forward the far-left agenda. But really, if Jesse Jackson, God forbid, had won the presidency, which would have been impossible— you wouldn't see much of a difference in social policies than you are seeing under Barack Obama. It's just that the radical left finally found the right guy to do their bidding. And he's enjoying every minute of it. Never had as good a time in his life. Where else but in America can you espouse Marxism one day and live like a king the next? Where else but in America can you tell the people to eat carrots and broccoli and eat ribs and French fries and mashed potatoes and not be told that you're a hypocrite, but in the United States of America, because there's no, fundamentally, there's no voice of opposition. The Republicans are busy with the budget. Okay, fine, budget without a budget. Terrific. It's important work, but it's not the only. Not, what does it profiteth a nation if it gaineth the world and loseth his soul? Well, the answer is we've lost our soul, and we haven't even gained the world. At the end of the day, what Jesus was really saying is if you lose your soul, you lose the world as well. I don't think you understand that subtlety, because you don't wind up with the world after you lose your soul. That's an interesting phenomenon. How many people do you know that will give up their soul in doing a deal with the devil and gain the riches, and then eventually they lose their riches because their soul was gone? They lose it to drugs or to alcohol or to God knows what other excess, and they lose everything, because without the soul, there's nothing. So America has slowly seen its soul eroded over the last, 50 years. Now you say, well, how did that happen? You can say socialist 1,000 times and it doesn't have any meaning anymore. So let's stop saying socialist, communist, Leninist for a few seconds, and let's analyze what happened to the West. Why is the West in decline while Asia is on the rise? The answer to me has a manifest number of answers to it. But one rather appealing concept that may be my own is that the best and the brightest were lost in World War II. Let's look at Britain, which is a smaller nation. In Britain, it's a little different than in the United States. It was an honor to serve in the military in Britain. And any man who ducked the duty to serve in World War II was ostracized in England. And so they took the best and the brightest. Many of them joined the RAF if they could fly, and they flew and died in many missions, notably in the Battle of Britain, saving their country from the Luftwaffe, which was trying to destroy the British Air Force and couldn't do it. They hung on to the last second, largely because they had the Spitfire, but also because they had a leader worthy of the name named Winston Churchill, who Obama, of course, spit upon. The first thing Obama did when he took over the Oval Office was trash it by removing the bust of Winston Churchill. We're surprised he didn't put in a bust of Joseph Stalin, but he's not yet through. It's only, it's early in the man's administration. So let me go back to my main point. So you take the best and the brightest, and they didn't reproduce. They died in combat. They never married. They never had children. And what you have instead is Gordon Brown and Cameron running England. Take a look at them. Take a look at who was running England. Gordon Brown, go before him, the other one. What was his name? Alastair Cook's illegitimate grandson, he looked like to me. Blair. You had Tony Blair, another prize weakling. Then you had Gordon Brown, the next weakling, traitor Quisling. And now you have this other fake conservative, Cameron, running England. Now, are they likely the descendants of men who fought in, say, Britain? Maybe they are. Maybe they are, but metaphorically, you understand what I'm talking about. So the West, in other words, lost their best and their brightest in World War II, who gave their life for their country, and consequently, we are now in decline. That's one of the reasons. There are other reasons. That's one idea that I have. And I guess I'm just trying to share with you my pain today when I see the kind of thing that we have has happened to this country, that we can have such a brilliant communist in the White House who gets away with virtually anything, and there's not a peep goes out across the land virtually. Not a peep. But I say you got what you deserve. The American people got what they deserve by putting this man in the White House. Now, I want to go to nature for a minute. I'm a little all over the map because that's a better way to talk than it is in a straight logical fashion. Believe me, I could do the Aristotelian logic mathematical straight down the line. And not bat an eyelash, because my mind is like a steel trap when I need it to be. But talk radio does not have to be Aristotelian, nor does it have to be two-dimensional or one-dimensional for me to make my point. Sometimes it could be four-dimensional or five-dimensional, and sometimes it could be any way I want it to be. So let me go now to another subject that's somewhat related. As you know, I'm a naturalist, and I enjoy watching nature. It gives me some of the calm I have, whether it be my dog, who gives me great calm. He's my best friend, obviously. I think he's a little sick from something. He's listless lately. I don't think it's serious, but he's not feeling well. Maybe it's because I'm not feeling well, and they pick up what you're feeling because they're mimics. At the end of the day, they're the greatest mimics on earth, and we all know that. You eat, they eat. You go to the bathroom, they want to sit next to you. You go in a shower, they want to shower. You're happy, they're happy. You're talking to someone you like, they smile. You're upset and screaming and yelling, they get frightened and run away. So they're wonderful. We love them for that. And we know that. That's why we love our little friends, our little furry angels, I call them. So I observe animals, and one of the I like to watch birds lately. I've been getting more and more into bird life. I don't know what it is. And I have a house in the country up on a hill, and I've been watching for weeks now a peregrine falcon. At least I believe it's she's a peregrine falcon. Let's say for a moment it is. I don't know. I'm not an ornithologist. And she is protecting her nest from hawks, from predatory birds, other predatory birds who will keep circling her, trying to pick off an egg. Or maybe she has little birds in a nest, and she watches them like a hawk. She's in the hawk family. She circles and she swoops and she'll take on birds three times her size because those are her babies and her instincts kick in. And every day I come out with my binoculars and I stand up on the hill and I root for her. And I say, thank God she's there. Sometimes I'm afraid to look because I'm afraid she's going to be gone. And the other birds wore her out or killed her. And they killed her eggs and took it away. I mean, it's like a Disney movie to me, but much more deep than that. It's very survival of the fittest. And today I come up and there she is. She's up and she's circling. And you see the blackbirds coming in trying to take her. And she swoops down on them. They're twice her size. And she chases them away. And I say to myself, in addition to fighting off the predators who are trying to steal the eggs or her babies themselves, she has to go out and feed herself. Then she has to get food for her babies. And all of that is done. And that's how species survive. It's astounding to me. And then I see two welfare mothers on a subway car in New York, as fat as a house, fighting over a seat. And one of them forgets she has a baby in a stroller, her meal ticket, and the baby's stroller rolls off the subway car out on the platform. Thank God the train was in a station. And they're pulling each other's hair out. And I say to myself that the human being is below that of an animal. The human being is less dignified than that of an animal. And I didn't want to come to this point in my analysis of humans. I've always had somewhat of a reluctance to go there. And then I go to another place I have right on the water, and I see seagulls. And what do I see this morning for the first time? I see the seagull mother bringing in fish for a hatchling. I couldn't believe it. A little seagull hatchling is there and crying for her mother, and she swoops in and brings up a little sardine. Swoops in the bay, gets the sardine, comes back on the roof of the neighbor's house, and goes from the mouth to the baby's mouth, and the baby eats. And she goes again, and the baby cries until the mother comes back. And the mother comes back with a little sardine or whatever little fishlet that is. And she feeds the baby. In addition to feeding the baby, she has to feed herself. She has to protect the baby from the elements and from other birds. And I say to myself, the animal is more noble than man. And then I look at this country. Once the most noble nation on earth, with the eagle as our symbol. What is our symbol under Obama, I ask myself. We can make every joke in the world that we want. We're no longer the eagle. We are no longer the proud eagle. The man has torn the eagle's heart out. The man has destroyed the eagle. He's ripped its wings off. Today he has torn the wings off the eagle. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So if I were a cartoonist, I would show Obama singing Goody Goody, You Had It Coming to You in the White House right now, breaking open some Russian caviar sent to him by Medvedev, enjoying it in a secret back room with Reverend Ritus. That's the picture I would paint if I were a cartoonist, but given that I'm not a cartoonist, I can't express it anyway but verbally. I want to now focus on the captain who we heard, Captain Chris Ferguson. Just play it for a minute, clip 9, so you'll know who I'm talking about, of Atlantis.
Mission complete, Houston. After serving the world for over 30 years, the space shuttle's earned its place in history and it's come to a final stop.
Right. He put us at the back of the bus. That's why he's singing Goody Goody, Obama is. Christopher Ferguson. Now, he's an astronaut. Who is he? How did he become an astronaut? Did he do it through affirmative action? Did they pick him because he was white? Well, let's look at what he's achieved, and you'll see how it works in the real world as opposed to the world of the socialist, communist, social engineers. Christopher J. Ferguson was born September 1st, 1961. Navy captain, as we would expect. He was the pilot of Space Shuttle Atlantis on its first mission to space, which launched in 06 and returned on September 21st, 06. Okay, Ferguson was assigned as a commander of Space Shuttle Atlantis, which you just heard, right, and landed today, July 21. Who is he? Born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Captain Ferguson received a Bachelor of Science degree in Mechanical Engineering from Drexel University in 1984. We doubt very much that it was given to him because of his particular ethnicity. And he earned his Master of Science degree in Aeronautical Engineering from the Naval Postgraduate School in 1991. Again, it's not a subject such as journalism or, let us say, social science, an actual master's degree in Aeronautical Engineering. He then was commissioned, and this is critical to my discussion, he was then commissioned from the Navy ROTC program at the University of Pennsylvania. So now you know why the communist left vermin want to end ROTC around America, because they want to make certain that brilliant, strong, driven men like Ferguson cannot serve America in the military. Now you understand what's at stake in this nation. What is going to take to wake you up? I feel like breaking something right now. I see the world more clearly than anybody on earth, and it pains me. I can't even take it anymore. I can't even take it anymore, what I see. The left is your enemy. Make no mistake about it. It's not just a different viewpoint. They are the enemy of your freedom and the freedom of your children. Make no mistake about it. They want you a slave to the world. That's why they want ROTC off the campuses. You don't understand any of this, do you? So what did he do next? He receives his Naval Aviator Wings in Kingsville, Texas in 1986. Yay, Texas. And then he's ordered to fly the F-14 Tomcat in the training squadron in Virginia Beach. After a brief period on the Tomcat, he joins the Red Rippers of VF-11 deploying to the North Atlantic, Mediterranean, Indian Ocean on board the USS Forrestal, CV-59. While with VF-11, he also attended the United States Navy Fighter Weapons School, Top Gun. Again, they generally don't give Top Gun appointments based upon big mouths lawyers and things of that nature. It's basically amongst the best and the brightest with the greatest guts. He then is selected for the United States Naval Test Pilot School program in 1989, graduates in 1992. Again, actually graduated, not pushed forward and given a degree in order to satisfy the brochure that is sent out to the congressman in his district. In 1994, he's assigned to the weapons branch of the Strike Aircraft Test Directorate at the Naval Air Station, Patuxent River, Maryland, where he served as the project officer for the F-14D weapon separation program, becoming the first pilot to release several types of air-to-ground weapons from the Tomcat. He then becomes an instructor at the Naval Test Pilot School before joining the checkmates of VF-211 in 1995 and completes a deployment to the Western Pacific Persian Gulf in defense of the Iraqi no-fly zone aboard the USS Nimitz. Briefly serves as an F-14 logistics officer, and so forth and so on. I don't want to read it all to you, but you understand who this man is. Ferguson, who was of Polish descent, so stop your Polish jokes, is married to Sandra and has three children. When he was in space for his wedding anniversary, NASA played the Frankie Valli song, Can't Take My Eyes Off You, as the wake-up music that morning, after which Ferguson wished his wife a happy anniversary. It can break your heart to realize he just flew the last mission, because the missions are over, because he has put us on the back of the bus. Obama has done it, and he is now breaking open the Russian caviar sent to him, no doubt, by his friends in the Soviet Union, who have finally said, thank you, comrade, you have given us everything we have wished for the last 50 years. And of course, today, the Russians, knowing the importance of the shuttle, unlike many of you brainwashed fools who are buying the communist Democrat line that the shuttle has no use anymore, we didn't really need to use it. What you don't understand is the Russians are celebrating, saying today is the beginning of the age of Soyuz. So if the shuttle has no use anymore, as many of you brainwashed liberal fools believe, because you are so gullible to believe such a thing, then why are the Russians celebrating that it's the age of Soyuz? They're celebrating because they know the Americans are going to fly in the back of the rocket. And they now have an open field like they've never had in their life. That's why. So this completes one man's view of the world today. It's a day that you're living in. For me, a very difficult show to do because it's not really a show. It's an outrage that there is no screaming for the impeachment of Obama. How he got away with it without so much as a debate? There was no debate over this. Did you see a debate, a legitimate debate over whether or not the shuttle should be ended? Did you ever see such a debate? No. So with the stroke of a pen, the community organizer, who so far as I know never shot a Daisy BB gun, terminates the shuttle program. Terminates it, ends it. Because the vermin in the media, the drug addicts in the media, the drug addicts on the left in the media, the drug addicts, the vassals of the communist worldwide movement, the vassals of the New World Order, the scribes, at MSNBC, NBC, ABC, CNN, etc., name it, put in the alphabets any way you want, the vassals, the fools who could do nothing else but become vassals of the media, the government media complex, because the vassals don't even understand the outrage that should be expressed. So they've lost their place in the American mind. That's why you don't buy newspapers anymore. That's why you've turned off the networks. And that's why talk radio is thriving. And now let me say something about talk radio. And this is for everybody listening to this show and everybody in the industry of talk radio. Let me be the leader once again. Let me come out from behind the shadows and say something to you in the industry. Many of you are walking around with your heads between your tail between your legs and your heads between your arms, thinking that talk radio is finished, that the internet is king, and the young people don't listen to talk radio, and that we're old, it's old media. Nothing could be further from the truth. Talk radio is reaching the tax-paying American voter. Make no mistake about it. And study the words that I just used for you. Those words were carefully chosen. Talk radio reaches the tax-paying American voter. Notice I said the tax-paying. I didn't say working American voter. I said the tax-paying American voter listens to talk radio religiously. And you are the people who should be shaping the future of America, not the non-tax-paying, non-working American, or the non-tax-paying, non-working immigrant, or the non-working, non-tax-paying welfare recipient, or the government worker. And I can prove to you that talk radio is still the most powerful element of the American media. And that is simply on Monday, I posted Abuse of Power, which will be published in 7 weeks. I mentioned it only a few times and I asked you to buy it. And I moved it from 145,000 on Amazon to number 34 in one day. And this is in the middle of the summer. Talk radio is the most powerful outlet in the American media landscape.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Liftoff, the final liftoff of Atlantis on the shoulders of the space shuttle. America will continue the dream.
Roger, roll, Atlantis.
Houston now controlling the flight of Atlantis. The space shuttle spreads its wings one final time for the start of a sentimental journey into history. 24 seconds into the flight, roll program complete. Atlantis now heads down, wings level on the proper alignment for its 8.5-minute ride to orbit. 4.5 million pounds of hardware and humans taking aim on the International Space Station. 40 seconds into the flight, the three liquid fuel main engines throttling back to 72% of rated performance in the bucket, reducing stress on the shuttle as it goes transonic for the final time. Piercing the pre-dawn skies, the space shuttle announces its arrival at the launch site with its signature sound of twin sonic booms having gone subsonic for the last time. The pre-flare maneuver executed. Landing gear down and locked. Main gear touchdown. Hurley now deploying the drag chute. Ferguson rotating the nose gear down to the deck. Having fired the imagination of a generation, a ship like no other, its place in history secured, the space shuttle pulls into port for the last time. Its voyage at an end.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is a day that shall live in infamy. It's a day that Obama is breaking out the caviar and the Russian champagne, no doubt celebrating his achievement, which marks his finest achievement since taking over the White House and seizing the White House, satisfying a dream of the Soviets that has motivated them ever since World War II, which is to dominate the United States of America militarily. They are finally seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, thanks to their friends in the American media and the fellow travelers in the U.S. government, notably in the State Department. We have now seen the end of the space shuttle program, where only the Soviets can take a rocket with a payload of humans and cargo to the International Space Station, which means that from here forward, the United States astronauts who will be going to the space station will be sitting at the back of the bus, exactly where Obama wants them. This is a day, as I say, that you should never forget. But more important than this, or just as important, is the big question of how he got away with it. Did you see a national debate over whether or not the space shuttle program should be ended? I didn't. Maybe I missed it. Maybe I was out one day and I had too much to drink. I must have missed that discussion. Did you see a vigorous discussion as to whether or not this would put us at risk in with regard to national security, what this means? I didn't see that debate. And you open up the newspapers today, do you see the vermin in the media talking about this from the point of view of how we have gone from John F. Kennedy and his inspirational messages and his desire to put a man on the moon and what that did for a generation of men and women in this country? How it motivated people, if they couldn't be an astronaut, they could be an engineer? Do you understand what this has done to us, what Obama has done to us? Well, I do, and I spent 1 hour talking about that on the show. I then went to talking about nature itself, talking about a peregrine falcon protecting her nest from predators and how a seagull protects its nest from predators and things of that nature. And I said to you that this is a day that you should never forget. But I don't scratch my head. I sit here in wonderment how the American people don't understand what's going on right in front of their eyes. Right in front of their eyes. We talked about that. I could ask you to comment if you wish, and I probably will. But I'm not ready to take any calls because I am still wondering how this has happened. And I have to tell you that at the end of the hour, I talked about talk radio itself. And I said to you that many people in the talk radio industry don't understand how powerful this industry really is. The voice of talk radio is the most powerful voice in the media to this day. And I mean the tax-paying American voter. I don't mean the government worker. I don't mean the non-tax-paying working American voter. And I don't mean the non-working, non-tax-paying American voter. I don't mean the illegal alien voter. And I don't mean all of the others in this country who shouldn't be here. This medium, talk radio, reaches the tax-paying American voter like no other medium. And by the way, of all of the talk radio shows, I would argue that although my show does not have the largest audience, it has the most loyal audience and possibly the most motivated audience. And the reason I'm telling you this is because right now talk radio is in the doldrums in terms of morale. Many people in the industry are not sure how long it will last. They're not sure if the web has taken over with all of the idiots running around thinking that they have to satisfy the 18-year-old drug-addicted, ecstasy-using dance hall idiot. And they think that that's going to satisfy the advertiser if they appeal to the 18 to 24-year-old ecstasy-taking dancer who doesn't even know what the space shuttle is. They wouldn't know if I talked about the space shuttle what I was talking about. They think that the audience is in the tomorrow generation. They don't understand that this audience is the most powerful. And what is my evidence? I'm going to tell you what my evidence is. My evidence was on Monday. I posted a picture of my new book, Abuse of Power, which is not even out yet. It's a novel based upon a, let us say, a true story about a man who was once powerful in the American media who loses his prominence because of a smear campaign by a shadowy leftist group under a man named Soren. It's called Abuse of Power, and I told you about it on Monday. I put the picture up on my website. I read a few excerpts from the book, and then I said to you, I need you to go to the Amazon, and I need you to pre-order the book. I need you to show the world that we are conservatives, and we read that the medium is not owned by the left, that they don't own the novels, they don't own literature. We are conservatives, and we read books. I didn't know what would happen. And at the end, the book was number 145,000 at the beginning of the show on Amazon because I hadn't talked about it but for once or twice 6 months ago. Now, remember, it's not even published yet. It won't be out till September 13th. And at the end of the show, it had moved up somewhat to the number 10,000 or whatever. I was very iffy. I said, maybe it's not going to work. I woke up in the morning shocked that you drove that book to number 34 in one day. And this is in the middle of the summer. This is in the middle of the summer, in the middle of a heat wave. You, my loyal Savage audience, went and you ordered that book. So I wasn't going to put money in my pocket that made me happy. It proved to me two things. A, my audience is still here and very much activist. And B, you care. You care enough to go out and do something that I asked you to do. And then I drew a generalization from this specific event. And that generalization is that talk radio is the most powerful element of the media there ever was. And I will tell you again, the midstream media claims that talk radio is dead or was dead. The empty suits and the empty skirts claim that it's a medium only for fringe extremists, just as they bashed the Tea Party calling you extremists. The vermin on cable news insists that it's an old medium for old men. Well, let me tell you this, with abuse of power, I've proved them all wrong. With abuse of power, Michael Savage has shown without the help of the empty skirts, without the help of the so-called conservative media, without the help of the newspapers and the government media complex, the Savage Nation and talk radio can motivate people to move a book from number 145,000 to number 34 on Amazon in one day. This is not something that the internet has ever done. Every book that a blogger came out with fell flat on its face. Did you know that? Every book that a blogger came out with, the publishers thought the bloggers were the future, they died. Nobody knows who the bloggers are, but people know who Michael Savage is. Talk radio is a medium you can't hide yourself easily in. You're on the air for 3 hours a day, and unless you have a massive production staff getting you ready for your TV show like some hosts do, or unless you speak in tongues for 3 hours like some other hosts do, you have to put yourself on the line. You have to talk about what you do every day, and you have to be honest with people. Some days are better than others. Some days you don't feel like being on the air, but you go on the air and you talk about that. And you talk from the heart. And if you talk from the heart, the audience will wake up the next day and say, what's he going to say today? If you give him the all, if you run that mile. I'm going to take a break. I got to take a break right now. Just go.
We copy your will stop, and we'll take this opportunity to congratulate you, Atlantis, as well as the thousands of passionate individuals across this great spacefaring nation who truly empower this incredible spacecraft.
Get Kennedy
which
ready.
For three decades has inspired millions around the globe. Job well done, America.
Remember, folks, you are living through history. It's a very, very sad day, July 21, 2011. A more devastating day than Pearl Harbor, not in terms of human life that was lost, but in terms of national prestige, national inspiration, and national security. A day that shall live in infamy, and it's hardly a footnote on any newspaper in America what this communist community organizer has done to this country. And there's nothing else I could say about it. I mean, I'm going to do it today. There's nothing more I can do on this. I try to warn you when I put the book out last October. I try to warn you what he was. And, you know, many of you, I blame you. I blame many of you so-called conservatives out there for having put Obama in office. Do you know that many of you actually called the show and said that McCain is so bad, which he was, and such a sellout phony, that you're going to teach the establishment a lesson and you're going to vote for Obama. And you put him in office. Many of you thought you were spiting the Republicans. You cut your nose to spite your face, and you gave us the community organizer who was not qualified for this job. Moreover, not only not qualified for the job, moreover, not competent enough for the job, but an absolute traitor as far as I can tell. This, to me, is the most traitorous act I've ever seen conducted by a president in my lifetime. Now, if you think I'm wrong, go ahead and tell me why I'm wrong. I think I'm right, and I think I have the evidence that I'm right. We are now passengers. Our men are astronauts. The best and the brightest amongst us are now passengers on a Russian space rocket to the space station. Where, in other words, he put us on the back of the bus. How in the world could you argue that that's something that's to be proud of when the Russians are celebrating the age of Soyuz? They would. The Russians themselves would deny that that it's something to be proud of. Many of you fools on the left think that the shuttle has no use anymore. It's a smart thing that Obama did. Are you that naive to believe the lie of the left wing that the Russians themselves are saying this is the age of the Soyuz? They know what it is. They know what it is, but you don't know what it is. You know, I was reading to you a monologue that we produced about talk radio and how important it is, and I actually got so choked up I had to go to break in the last hour. And I want to continue on it. I said that if you speak from your heart on a daily basis, people are going to listen to you. People get to know you. People get to know you as a real person. Some days are good, some days are bad. Some days you're more up than others, some days you're down. And they live with you for years. I've been on the air for 17 years. I've had people call and tell me they've listened to me since they were a kid. They listened to me in their father's car. Now they're grown and they're married. When I walk around San Francisco every once in a while, a man will come up to me and say, "Are you Michael Savage?" And believe me, as a talk radio host, we don't want to be known. We're not TV people. I'd rather not be known. And I say, yes. They say, almost with tears in their eyes, they say, "You keep me going. Thank you for being on the radio." A man from North Carolina this last weekend came up. I don't know how he knew who I was. I was alone. "Are you Michael Savage?" "Yes." He said, "You keep me going." And I've proven that talk radio is a vibrant medium. The book went on Monday from 145,000 to 34. I've stopped promoting it or talking about it, and I don't know where it is, nor do I care right now. I did it as a test. In the middle of a hot summer, with probably 40% of the audience away on vacation, not listening, people tuned out. In the middle of a hot summer, the book was moved from 145,000 to number 34 on this show alone. Not one other show talked about it. I didn't have to go on ABC or Good Morning America. I didn't have to talk to any of those schmucks. I didn't have to go on Fox News. O'Reilly's not as powerful as he thinks he is. I didn't need any of them. I needed you, and you came through for me. And that proves that talk radio is still the most vibrant medium. Why? Because people who listen to talk radio are the tax-paying American voter. And you are smarter than the average American. You are more politically active than the average American. And you vote with both your wallets and your ballots. Savage Nations have proven it again. They went on Amazon, they bought the book, and they're going to do it again and again and again. And what they're saying is they want an end to the naked Marxism of Obama. They know what he's doing to America. Millions of Americans are alarmed that he's getting away with it. Not only what he's doing, but that he's getting away with it with hardly a voice speaking out. Yes, it came out that the CEO of Wynn Resorts said what had to be said. And the CEO of Home Depot finally said that Obama's killing business. But where are the rest? It reminds me of the story, and again, I'm not making a direct comparison, so don't quote me out of context, as you leftists are famous for doing. Hitler also used the industrialists, so they thought. They thought they were using him. They thought they had a stooge in this loudmouth Austrian. And they thought that after he restored Germany's militarism and they made their fortunes again, they would put him in his place and control him. They also underestimated the demagoguery of Hitler, or they confused Hitler's demagoguery for the man himself. Don't make the same mistake with Obama. He's 100 times more crafty than you give him credit for. Don't underestimate Barack Obama, not for one second. He is the most intelligent man to have ever inhabited the White House, and he's the most dangerous man to have ever sat in that Oval Office. Make no mistake about that. That is one man's opinion. That is one man's opinion. And a day like today proves to me that I am right with the deepest fears came through on a day like today, and this is only the beginning. If he can get away with this, what can he get away with tomorrow? The world is his. It's like Tony Montana. The world is his. He gets to fly around in Air Force One all over the world at the company expense. The first lady flies all over the world on expensive vacations, and they tell you to come back, and they tell you to eat carrots. And she comes out, and she rolls a broccoli on the lawn, and you actually believe she believes a word she says to you. She gets away with this? No one asks what a mother-in-law is doing in the White House? Have you ever known a president to have a mother-in-law living in the White House advising him? His kitchen cabinet has a new meaning.
Savage.
So you wonder how an outright man like Obama can get away with destroying the shuttle. Our space travel basically is dead in the water. Russia won. and basically not a peep in the media? The answer is the government media complex, as I so aptly have been talking about and naming since 1998 when I gave the famous speech at the Commonwealth Club. All right, so what better example is there of the government media complex and the vermin in the media than the one I'm about to play for you? Here is a jealous, talentless hack on MSNBC whose husband, Alan Greenspan, oversaw the dismantling of our economy, getting green with envy about Wendy Murdoch saving her husband from the pie thrower. Listen to clip 19.
And there is her history, coming to the U.S. on a student visa, then marrying her first husband, a man who with his wife had sponsored Wendy, as first reported in the Wall Street Journal.
Wendy, who was a teenager at the time, had an affair with the father, her sort of adopted
vermin,
father.
Rat vermin
and
in the media.
Two of them ended up getting
jealous
married.
Women.
For
jealous,
long
ugly
enough for
old
her
women.
To get a green card.
Jealous, ugly, old communist women. Hating Wendy Murdoch because she was the star of the show. And it gets sickening. Now listen to this in clip 20 when this jealous, talentless hack on MSNBC, whose husband Alan Greenspan oversaw the dismantling of our economy, listen to how vicious and desperate she becomes in clip 20.
Now she is a force herself, only last week releasing a movie she's produced for her husband's 20th Century Fox.
She's a powerful advocate for her husband, for his interests, and for herself.
A powerful defender of her husband.
Mr. Murdoch, your wife is a very good left hook.
As the whole world has now seen.
If there was any shame in the world, this jealous, talentless hack would never have been put on the television screen. But because General Electric is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Obama administration, or vice versa, they have these talentless, rating zero, talentless hacks on the air to push the Obama agenda. Shame on you. Shame on you, Andrea. Your time never came. You are always a has-been. In fact, you are never was. And now let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. Actually, I haven't taken one call today, have I, Beowulf? No, I don't think I'm going to. I mean, you can call 1-800-449-8255, but I don't think I don't know if I'm going to take any call. Instead, I'm going to talk about something else and show you how it relates, how everything is political. I'm going to show you that. It's going to be about Indian food, for example. I myself like Indian food from time to time. I tend to avoid spicy foods, but once in a while I love Indian food, right? Many of you who eat Indian food probably have eaten a dish called vindaloo, right? It's pretty common in Indian restaurants, vindaloo. But what is vindaloo? And what does it have to do with politics? Well, it comes from the Goa area of India, which was once a Portuguese colony. And vindaloo is a marriage of Portuguese and Indian words, vinho or wine, ajos or garlic in Portuguese, and aloo or potato in Hindi. And vindaloo has developed into the spicy curry that you know today, the Indian curry. But you have to look back on what I just said to you. Because Goan cuisine is well known for using spices like kokum, a spice that is sour like tamarind. And it's also known for its long history as a Portuguese colony. And as a Portuguese colony, this area of India, Goa, developed many dishes that were Portuguese in taste and in origin. And in reading that, I asked myself, wait a minute. The spices were from Portugal, or they were liked by Portuguese, and they were picked up by the Indians. They don't even know that they were Portuguese in origin. And the dishes are Portuguese in origin, and many of the Indians don't even know that. And I say to myself, is California becoming a colony of Mexico, where so much of the food of California is virtually that and indistinguishable from Mexican food and spices in particular? You can go into many Italian restaurants, for example, in San Francisco, and you cannot distinguish the difference in taste between Mexican food and Italian food because of the fact that many of the workers cook for themselves. That's another little something you don't know. There was once a rule in restaurants where you didn't feed the workers the same food as the clients because, well, just because you let them cook their own food and they made it any way they wanted. But now it's reached the point where much of the Italian food, especially the red sauces, tastes very much like Mexican sauces, which is not to denigrate Mexican cuisine. I don't particularly like beans. I don't eat it. I can't digest it. I don't have the ethnicity to digest beans. I apparently lack the gene necessary to eat those highly laced beanie foods, so I get a lot of gas. I don't eat bean foods. I don't like them. And that includes Middle Eastern foods with beans in them, such as chickpeas. I don't like any beans at all. I just don't have the adaptation for it. Nevertheless, I'm making another point, which is that just as Goa, which was once a colony of Portugal, and an area of India, was once a Portuguese colony, and the vindaloo, Goa's best known dish, is a marriage of Portuguese and Indian words, vinho or wine, ahus or garlic in Portuguese, and ahulu or potato in Hindi. As a result of the colonization of India by the Portuguese, I'm arguing that through the cuisine we could see that California is virtually becoming a colony of Mexico. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. That's neither here nor there, but it's an important point. For those of you who, you know, want to have a little diversity, or let us say a little spice in your verbal diet, I had to bring in a little food. I will take a call. Let's go to WOR, Doug in New York. You're the first caller today. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Doug. I worked on the space shuttle for 20 years and was actually a manager over the installation of the O-rings. Challenger. And there's been two times that I've cried in my career. One was obviously at the Challenger.
And when it blew up. I remember that day. It was 1984, wasn't it? Or 87? I don't remember. Was it 87?
86.
86. I was in a car. I remember I couldn't believe what I was listening to.
Yeah.
Yes, the same as today. It had the same impact on me today as the shuttle being destroyed by the president.
You know, I knew the day was going to come when the shuttle had come to an end. That's not what I'm sad about. It's the fact that there's nothing to go on to. Throughout the space period, we've always had a follow-on program. And today, Mr. Obama has put the end to our space program, and it's a very, very...
Well, if you need money for Medicare, Medicaid, and fake environmental projects that fatten the wallets of his contributors, you don't need a space rocket to take people to the International Space Station. You got to make sure that roads to nowhere are built so that the contractors who put Obama in power get their billions of dollars. You got to make sure that the Medicare fraudsters continue to pocket billions of dollars so they can bundle money for Obama's reelection. And that's why it happens. It's all about money, isn't it?
It is, and you know, almost every advanced technology that we use on a day-to-day basis in the private sector come from the space program.
Well, that's right. We don't need advanced technology. As long as you can have webmasters and you have people who know how to take drugs and have sex with strangers, then you'll have a fine American society. And, of course, the next step will be to destroy our submarine fleet in the same manner because, frankly, there are too many white males on submarines. You understand that it takes a certain type of person to be able to sacrifice their impulses for a long enough period of time to serve on a submarine. And you just can't have that. So you've got to diversify the submarines a little bit more and make sure that you put KGB women on the submarine. And if you have to take out a few missile silos to put in showers for women in order to satisfy the EEOC, so be it. Let's destroy the submarine fleet so they look like beached whales the way the Soviet submarine fleet looks today. That's what Obama's next goal is, to make sure that we have hundreds of submarines that are no longer useful so that we're on par with the Soviets. You can mark my words, that's what he's after. It's not about putting women on submarines. It's about putting the submarines on the beach. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to the next caller, Tucson, Arizona. Steve, welcome to the program.
Michael, I did something, and you motivated me to do it that I normally don't do, but because of the sincerity of your voice, I've been a relatively new listener. I've been listening for about 5 years. It was a tip from a friend at work. I have to say I'm a recovering liberal for about the last 15 years, but when you were talking about your book and how it moved up on the chart, I'm a reader. I have one of those Kindles carried with me everywhere. You motivated me to do something, an impulse buy, went to the site, clicked on the button, and I guess next month it's going to be delivered to me.
I want to ask you something. Are you reading books on Kindle as opposed to buying instead of paper? You know, Mrs. S. just traveled, and she said two out of three people on the airplanes who were reading at all were reading Kindle editions of books. Is that really the trend? Is that big?
You know why I like it, Michael? Very simply, when I carry my Kindle with me, it's like I've got a library. At this point, I've got about 200 books stored in this very.
So in other words, you can read many books on the. I honest to God, I'm not into the Kindle thing because the screens hurt my eyes. I'd rather read a book if I'm. It rests. You know, it's funny. The feedback from a piece of paper actually rests my soul, my eyes, and screens tend to agitate me. But that's a separate story. But I understand the convenience of a Kindle edition in that, let's say you're traveling, you're on an airplane, one little screen, no 10 books, you don't have to carry a book bag. And so, in other words, weight alone is a reason to do it. I mean, just carry the carrying weight, right?
That, as well as the fact that I don't believe that it affects the eyes negatively when you compare it to a page, because I've been a reader all of my life. It's just within the last couple of years that I've switched over to the Kindle, and I just really enjoy having a library in my hands wherever I go.
So, in other words, you could be reading Abuse of Power, and then if you want to move to another book, you can shift to that other book seamlessly and then go back to the other book back and forth.
I can do that. At any given time, Michael, I'm reading three different books.
No, I was going to say that. It's very funny you should say it, and it's an interesting phenomenon that I never talked about. I very often will watch two or three TV shows at once at night. I'll jump around from a movie to a military history sometimes to even another topic. Not so much because I can't focus on it. It's because I'm more interested in the three things than I am in any one of them.
It's something.
Yeah, all right. Hey, I appreciate you buying Abuse of Power so far out. I think it's going to be a big hit in September. And what's going to happen when that book, which is putatively based upon a true story about a media figure who was smeared by the left machine and then tries to smuggle himself into Britain to stop a terrorist attack and find out who was behind not only smearing him but conducting terrorist attacks on American soil leading up to a U.S. senator, by the way. I think that book is going to, when it comes out September 13th, I really wish the pub date was September 11th for obvious reasons, but September 11th falls on a Sunday and the 13th is a Tuesday when books are traditionally published. I believe that one of the reasons that this novel is going to be a hit in many languages is because it touches a raw nerve, not only about terrorism, but about the smearing of a decent individual, almost a Billy Budd-like character. In this case, it's Jack Hatfield, who is the new Billy Budd. He could become a new Billy Budd, I hope, in literature. And the other reason is that one of the heroes of the book happens to be a Muslim woman in the book, which is very unexpected, you would think, because most people deal in two dimensions, not three. And so that's a very important phenomenon as well. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So, the question is, what do you do on a day like today, a day that you live in infamy, when Obama has put a knife in the heart of the American eagle, torn the wings off the eagle, torn the feathers off the wings of the eagle, broken the beak of the eagle, broken the neck of the eagle? What are you going to do on a day like today? What do you do? What do you do? Do you stop living? Do you curl up in a ball and cry? No. You go on with your life, and you make certain that another communist never enters the White House. This is America's first and perhaps last experiment with an outright Marxist in the White House. Now, you don't have, what does he have to wear, a red beret and march with the Lenin flag? The guy is literally is signaling. He's almost like a child who's saying, stop me. Comes in the first day, gets rid of the Winston Churchill statue. One day after another, czars he puts in, communist czars who espouse Mao Zedong, look up to Lenin. Openly, no one says a word. A few people in the media, a few people write some books, gets away with it. So he keeps raising the stakes. All right, so what can I do next? Let's see. Gay marriage in the military? Not a word. Let's see what's next. Let's end NASA. Let's see what happens. Nothing. Not a word. Keep going. So it's like a child saying, stop me, and no one will stop him. So what's to stop him from decimating the entire nation? Till eventually, your freedoms are gone, and you're living in an absolute tyranny. I don't see very much, because you have the Republicans, all they're talking about is money. Hey, it's great that they're fiscal conservatives. I love that. But again, I'll repeat to you, there's more in life than money, is it not? Is it not true? What does your preacher tell you every Sunday? Does he tell you to go out and the Bible says you shall be a rich man? Show me where in the Bible it says you must be a rich man or a rich woman. Show me where in the Bible it says you must have wealth to be a decent human being. I can't find that in the Bible, and I've read it front and back. I've read every chapter and verse of the Old and New Testaments. Okay, I don't see anywhere in the Bible that says you must be a rich man. It's all about saving your soul. The Bible is all about saving the human soul, the precious, the endangered human soul, which has never been more assailed than it is today under the leftist, atheist administration that we are currently dealing with. Never before has this nation had a soulless administration than we do today. Soulless. A soulless, marching, victoriously marching leftist administration, achieving one victory after another, silently savoring their victories. Never before have we lived through anything like this. And as I say, had the American people only known, or had they only listened to some of us who saw it was coming, his entire childhood was clearly what it was. His entire adolescence was clearly what it was. His entire young adulthood was clearly what it was. The man sits for 20 years in the church where the preacher screams and rails against America. So what did you expect? You expected the man to suddenly become a loyal American who loves the country, loves the military, understands that we're in a dangerous world, and who, like the peregrine falcon, protects the nest, who, like the seagull feeding her young offspring, protects the people. A leader is supposed to protect the people. Do you understand that? A leader is not supposed to protect his party. A leader is not supposed to feather the nests of those who put him in power. A leader is supposed to protect the people. And you read ancient history. Read ancient history. There have been good rulers, bad rulers, evil rulers. But the best rulers, if you study history, if you study philosophy, I don't care whether it's Buddhist philosophy or Hindu philosophy, the best leaders are those who protect the people and give the best protection to the nation. And so you got to start from the top to understand it. Can you actually sit there and in all your reality argue that Obama is actually protecting the American people and has put the American people first in all of his actions and thinkings? I don't see any evidence to that effect. I would say the opposite is true. And to me, the death of the space mission, which began under a Democrat, Kennedy. Play Kennedy again in his waning minute of the show. You got to play Kennedy, please.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth. No single space project in this period will be more impressive to mankind or more important for the long-range exploration of space.
And this president ended it all. The space flights are over. It's dead. He broke the wings off the eagle. We are no longer a nation represented by the eagle. God only knows what the symbol would be if you wanted to play comedic in the political arena. You could come up with all sorts of animal emblems to symbolize what this man has done to this country. And he's only begun. Remember, he's only a couple of years into his first regime. It's only a few years into the first regime, and look what he's achieved for the people who put him there. He's actually one of the most successful presidents in American history from their point of view. Those who hate this country, those who hate the white male, those who hate the hegemony of this nation, those who hate the superiority of the American military machine, those who hate the American dollar have never been happier. They've almost achieved their victory. A little bit more pushing, we can almost be where they want us. With just a little more pushing, Soros could have his wildest dreams fulfilled. With just a little more pushing, the shadowy figures who manipulate our currency and manipulate our stocks can have it all. They've almost got what Tony Montana wanted. They've almost got the world. Just a little more pushing and we're gone. We're on the back of the space shuttle. Obama has put us in the back of the bus. He's put the American astronaut in the back of the bus. Do you understand the symbolism? If I were a cartoonist, I'd show American astronauts sitting on the back of the space shuttle. He put us in the back of the bus. Do you understand that?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Big news is that the country is broiling, and we're not here in the Bay Area. I got to tell you, you know, my lead story on michaelsavage.com is a weather map. For the first time, I put a weather map up, and it shows a beautiful, vast fog bank off the coast of Northern California, especially here in the San Francisco area. It was like 66, 68 degrees today, nice brisk breeze. I didn't wear a windbreaker this morning when I came out of the house. And yeah, you see the map on these websites, like the country is burning up. Hey, it's a hot summer. I mean, there's been no change in the San Francisco weather patterns that I could see since I've been here. How many years? Since 74, 84, 94, 04. Well, 35 years is a little too long. You remember what Mark Twain said? I never spent a colder winter than a summer in San Francisco. It hasn't changed. And the rest of the country is hot. So is this the hottest summer on record? No. So what's the story? It's a hot summer. Except in San Francisco, it's foggy. Well, what else is new? What else is new? Let's go to michaelsavage.com and see what else is new. Hitler confidant Rudolf Hess exhumed from a cemetery in Bavaria. The move was to stop pilgrimages by right-wing extremists. Well, the day they remove Stalin's remains, to stop pilgrimages by left-wing extremists will be a great day as well. Today is a very sad day. Obama destroyed the U.S. space shuttle, ending United States space dominance, and gave Russians the victory they've been after since the 1950s. It's astounding that this man is in plain sight, destroying this country, dismantling everything that makes it great. Redistributing wealth, destroying our military, destroying our space, destroying our space superiority. It is astounding how he does it in plain sight and no one says a word about it except yours truly. Yeah, come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485. And get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Find out more about UK's ban of Michael Savage. Yeah. You know why? Because I stood up to the New World Order. So they don't want me in old Londonistan. And speaking of which, Abuse of Power will be my fiction debut in about a month and 5 weeks or so in early September. And I tested it the other day on this show. Do you know that you drove it from number 145,000 to number 34 in one day? Russia declares the era of Soyuz after shuttle. The Russian system is now the sole means for delivering astronauts. Thank you, Barack Obama. You've given the Russians everything they have dreamed of. Another article on my website, End of Space Shuttle Marks Retreat in America's Ambitions. The Home Depot co-founder, the head of many Las Vegas casinos, says that Obama is choking recovery. I think they know more about business than the community organizer and his communist buddies from the colleges. Question. Why are Obama's 2008 bundlers fleeing his political machine? Answer. Because they finally found out who he is. Report. Obama is the top recipient of News Corporation donations. Despite the firm's highly publicized links to the GOP, Murdoch gave more money to Obama. It's unbelievable to me, Bill. How you get away with it? Blarney, Bill. Oh, yes. What else is on the website today? This is so sad, I can't even read it. Is there anything I can read on my site that isn't sad? Well, here's something good. Here's good news. U.S. mail delivery may be reduced to 3 times a week. That would be good news. It would cut down on carbon pollution. Here's another one if you need entertainment today. Not even a baby can get in the way of a subway fight. Take a look at two welfare mothers beating each other up on a New York subway with a baby. One of them forgot her welfare magnet, and he rolled out of the subway car while they were fighting. Thank God the train was in at a stop, and the baby and the carriage rolled out onto a platform. Isn't welfare great? And on the bottom left of my website, San Fran Fargo, we enjoy natural air conditioning, no weather change from past millennia, says Michael Savage. Check it out. It's unbelievable. It's all true, unfortunately. It's not believable, but it's true, okay? And, of course, you go to other sites, and they show high red marks, the big broil. Everyone's broiling, high temperatures, da-da-da-da-da. And there's a new video put out by Big Sis of Department of Homeland Security. And guess who the terrorists are? White middle-class men, most likely terrorists. We are led to believe that Muslims and people of color are the ones who will save America from the white man. This is what you have now under this terrific president. Terrific president we have up there. Russia declaring era of Soyuz. America now stuck on Earth. Astronauts now have to hitchhike into space. This is what you got with the communist dictator, the communist tyrant in the White House. 1-800-449-8255. What else is in the news? Well, you'll hear more about it right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I was wondering why I haven't heard you really rant more about technology, in particular cell phones and MySpace and Facebook and these other...
Well, first of all, I don't rant. I do expostulations and such, but there are others in the business who might rant on it. What exactly is it that you'd like me to say to make you happy?
Everything you say makes me happy. Most of what you say makes me happy, actually. No, you just made a comment a couple weeks ago.
No, you sounded like a younger woman who was a lib, you know, an Obamaite who wanted me to sound like a fool. No, but really, what are you actually asking?
I'm asking why I don't hear you speak about it more. And don't you think it's one of the major contributors to the downfall of our society, besides liberalism?
Oh, you want me to be a conservative old fuddy-duddy railing against space, MySpace, and all of that?
No,
well, I'm not going to do it. I mean, I don't particularly go online to talk to people. I would rather talk to them in person. There are those who do, and it's just another way of meeting people. I don't see anything wrong with it. Eventually, they have to meet each other,
and
where their human qualities or lack thereof will show. I think it's a more efficient way than going to a bar, for example, and talking to 10,000 strangers until you meet your wife.
All right, I'll give you that, but...
I'm saying, like, you know, I watch some of these eHarmony ads. You know, I don't know whether to believe them or not. You know, see happy couples. I don't believe it for a minute. But I would believe that if a person sends in a, you know, here I am, I like this, this is the, like, what would your colors I like, and music I like, and I like whales, and I like, you know, trees, and I like guns, and all. So you meet a woman like that. Yeah, that's a good start. Can you imagine the amount of time you have to spend randomly trying to meet someone who you have to get through all of that with? So in that sense, I think it's a wonderful way to cut through so many wasted dates, for example.
What about the
cell phones? What's wrong with a cell phone? It's revolutionized communication. I think it's phenomenal. I know people who run billion-dollar businesses on cell phones. They can be anywhere in the world, and they're not imprisoned. It's freed people rather than imprisoned them.
You think so?
I know so. Well, I have a friend right now who's on vacation in a tropical paradise, still running a company that does a tremendous amount of business. This individual could not do this if he didn't have a cell phone and a BlackBerry.
But you don't think people are kind of walking around hypnotized and tranced by their little BlackBerries and cell phones, and they can't leave the house without them?
Yeah, but you have less time for neurosis this way. There's less time to fear things. If you're on your BlackBerry with two thumbs, there's less time to worry about the eternal questions. This is much better this way. You just live... thinking that you're conquering the universe by pressing keys on a BlackBerry. It's far better than facing the eternal questions that I had to face. You see that? I got you to laugh. So I take it you're not happy with all these technologies.
I think it's making people very dumb. I think they don't read as much as they used to.
Read? Why are you kidding me? They're reading BlackBerries. They're reading telegram messages on BlackBerries. No need for punctuation. No need for any kind of articulation.
It's wonderful. Everyone's been reduced to the level of an ignorant rap musician. What could be better? You talk about democracy. Everyone's now down to a first grade level. What could be better?
It's cutting across all party lines. It's tripartisanship.
So have you tried to find a mate on one of these space pages or whatever?
Oh, I don't know. I met my husband in a bar, and we've been married for...
Okay. Thank you for the low blow. Women always win. But that was easy. I wanted you to give me a good gut shot.
I'm a big fan, and I'm not a lib. I'm articulate, but I'm not a lib.
And you also sound like you're a lib. That's the you could be a great reversal. You could really be. You could do a lot of damage to them up in Spokane. Thanks for being a good sport on the Savage Nation. So I have nothing. I have in my pocket, but I carry the old and the new technology in my pocket. I have, of course, a cell phone. It's people laugh at it. The young ones snicker. Look at that man with a fat cell phone. You know, they think slimmer makes them smarter. I love it. I just love it. What I love is you go into a hotel lobby where there's a bar, which I will do on occasion in San Francisco, and you see the poor young people, they're staring into their palm as though it's sort of a crystal ball. And in this crystal ball is all of their future and all of their hopes and dreams are tied up in their hand. And, of course, everyone's pretending that they're meeting someone there and that they just showed up a little early, even though they're looking for someone. And the chances of them meeting someone are diminished by the fact that they're not looking at anyone while they're really looking for someone, because they're looking into the palm of their hand to pretend that they're actually meeting someone. So as I say, I mean, certainly that inhibits the chance of meeting someone when you're looking into your own hand as though the future lies in your hand. I also, as a social observer, every time I walk past a telephone store now, I laugh to myself. I do have my own sense of humor, which keeps me going here. I walk past, like, Verizon, and it's always the same kind of, like, icky, creepy guys that look like they might be, you know, Pee Wee Herman's on the side. I don't know, like tight pants, weird haircuts, pointy shoes, and kind of like freaky faces. And you see women, you see people sitting at desks with them as though they're in confessionals. Go and look at the people in these Verizon stores as they talk to one of these creepy Pee Wee Herman salesmen about their telephonic needs. And it's as though they're in a confessional or in a psychiatrist's office of 10 years ago, and they're leaning over with their heart on their hand, and this is what I need, and this is what I'm looking for. And the guy's like, I think I have just the exact... This is their whole world is wrapped up in the latest thin telephonic device, which I can never understand. I feel as though I've landed on a strange planet. So in many ways, I do enjoy the current society. It's entertaining for me to look at these things as they go on. Devices, sure, I live on the computer, I'm on 12 hours a day, I'm going blind from it. Cell phone, I have a pocket watch that's not digital, it has a second hand and actual hands that glow in the dark, and it's round like a railroad guy's watch. It's a Timberland Swiss something, or I don't know, watch from 20 years ago. I like to look at the time as the hand goes around. I didn't tell you this. What a great call for this. I also collect antique clocks. I don't have many. I like French, bronze, marble, and such 19th century, early 20th century French three-piece sets. Okay, I have a few of them, and they're all running well. Well, this is strange. One of them, which I've had for 5 years, I bought at auction 10 years ago for $600. It was a steal because it was designed for the export market by the French in the 1890s, and it was designed for export probably to Syria or Egypt because it's designed like a mosque. And it's astounding. Both of the two side candelabra pieces are like little minarets, and the design of the green alabaster marble is that of a mosque. It's gorgeous. And as I say, the French design for overseas markets, it ran fine for 6 years. About a week ago, it stopped running. I happen to be in flux right now. I'm not going to disclose where, but I'm going to be moving to an undisclosed state and an undisclosed location part-time. Back and forth. No one's going to know where I am and when, and I'm not going to tell you why, where, or how. And it's as though this clock is a pet. It stopped running. I swear to God, I think that clocks have souls. I know that sounds crazy, but I know that pets have souls because they behave weirdly too when they know you're leaving them or you're ditching them or you're not thinking right about them. They start, you know, like peeing in strange places in your house, hopefully not in your shoes while you're sleeping at night. But again, even my dog is acting up, and I have to tell him, look, if you keep it up, you're not coming with me. Naturally, that makes him more nervous, so he does more of the sneaky stuff. And then I say, well, you're not coming with me, so he does it again that night. So it's a vicious circle. But the fact of the matter is, I also collect the antique clocks. And yesterday, last night, I had my clocksmith come over. I'm not going to divulge his name nor his story. But after work, I went home and I asked this clocksmith who came over, who was trained. You want to believe this story? Here he is working on my clock. He has a screwdriver that's a German screwdriver, maybe 70 years old. I look at it immediately and see the quality of the machining on the screwdriver. I know it wasn't made in China out of pressed steel. And I show him some tools that my father left for me when he died. You won't believe how beautiful these things are. And we're talking about tools and clocks and watches. And I said, didn't you have to apprentice to become a clocksmith? He said, yes, I did. He said, I had to become an apprentice for several years. And in order to pass the apprenticeship exam, I had to make a clock. We all did. I said, well, when you go, when you die off, I mean, he's an elderly gentleman. Are there any people around who still can fix a clock? He said, surprisingly few. And that's it. So I said, I don't know. All these clocks are going to stop and not run again because there's no one learning how to fix a clock. Now, why would somebody waiting online in New York City in the freezing rain for a job with DHS, ICE, or FBI want to learn how to fix a clock when they might actually have to go to school, master a trade, pass an exam, when in the option they could just simply go to work and sit on their behinds as though they're still in college, go out at night and get drunk and come to work in the morning and try to capture Osama bin Laden or his minions before they set off another bomb in the subway? Don't get me started. I know what's going on. I've tried to warn you, but I failed. I admit my failure. I failed. 15 years I've tried to warn you that diversity is a cover for perversity. But I failed. You didn't listen to me. You were led to believe that it's just an alternative lifestyle. It has no effect on the people themselves. You were led to believe that anything goes because you were told that anything goes. I warned you what would happen. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Jennifer Marshall of the Heritage Foundation brings us the latest on the religious wars in America, and she explains why the founders' freedom of religion and the Constitution still matter. Ever a catalyst for impassioned debate, the focus of religious freedom resurfaced in a recent commemoration of fallen firefighters of 9/11. Jennifer, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks. It's great to be with you.
Well, what is the real significance of the debate over the street name in New York, Seven in Heaven Way?
Well, we are at a point in our nation where we need greater clarity about religious freedom, and specifically that our founders intended freedom for religion as they built the architecture of this country. What we're seeing now instead in the case of the Seven in Heaven Way in New York is that firefighters who responded to the 9/11 calls to report to the Twin Towers and reported there before the second tower fell and lost their lives that day have been remembered for that significant sacrifice, that consequential sacrifice for their neighbors in the renaming of a street, a portion of a street in a Brooklyn neighborhood called Red Hook. These were all members of the Red Hook Station, and the seven who lost their lives have been memorialized by the renaming of a section of a street there called Seven in Heaven Way now. Well, not everybody likes that name, and some atheist groups have gotten very troubled about the fact that this gives a tacit acknowledgement and affirmation of heaven, and that there's this public acknowledgement of religion. And so they have made statements against Seven in Heaven Way. What's wrong, though, in this situation is that that kind of sweeping intolerance that would not allow any kind of religious allusion or religious symbol in the public square, that's simply not what our founders intended.
Is this public allusion to religion, as the American atheist put it, breaking the Constitution? I don't believe so.
The religious freedom that is guaranteed by our Constitution is, first of all, the freedom to worship according to our conscience. And therefore, the founders didn't want the government to have an overbearing presence in the religious freedom of individuals and of individual congregations and denominations. So they were, in that important sense, guarding the freedom of religion from government interference. Conversely, they were also protecting against the government establishment at the federal level of a particular faith. And so that's what the Establishment Clause protects in our Constitution. Now, this in no way was intended to absolutely evacuate the public square of religious statements, of religious symbols, of religious arguments. This is what the late Richard John Newhouse called the naked public square, the idea that we would strip our public discourse, our public conversation, of all references to religion, that we would strip our public life of all religious symbolism. That simply is not what was intended in the American model of religious freedom, which is really freedom for religion.
Well, don't you think the founders' views on freedom of religion are still appropriate for today's context?
Absolutely. This is very critical that we maintain the founding ideals for freedom of religion. This is the basis, the linchpin of our freedoms as a society. And understanding religious freedom is going to be critical for maintaining freedom generally in the United States. It's particularly important as we try to protect against an ever-encroaching government and protect the religious liberties of individual institutions that are providing vital public services. We're seeing increased interference with religious liberty in the case of Catholic Charities, which provides adoption services and foster care services. And as jurisdictions, states, or localities have given legal recognition to same-sex couples, we have seen that Catholic Charities providing adoption services according to their vision, a moral vision, that they want to place children with a married mother and father, that is running afoul of what the state is now imposing in some jurisdictions with regard to sexual orientation non-discrimination law. So we've seen very recently in the case of Illinois, where Illinois just advanced legal recognition of same-sex civil unions, now several dioceses of the Catholic Church have had to get out of the adoption and foster care business because the state was enforcing that each adoption agency and foster care agency comply with sexual orientation non-discrimination law in that state. So that forced Catholic Charities into the awful predicament of either having to abandon their religious tenet that they would place children with a married mother and father, or that they would have to get out of the adoption business. What several of the dioceses there in Illinois have done is to stand by their principle, their religious conviction, and that's meant that they've had to get out of serving needy children through their adoption and foster care services. And that's a tragedy. That's not at all what was intended in terms of creating a space for religious practice in America. America is a highly vibrant religious society. Something like 90% of Americans say that religion is at least somewhat important to them. This is a remarkable significance in its longevity and of significance in American history. And we have always solved problems in America through many hands, including religious ministries or religious congregations who have been at the forefront often of solving deep social needs and responding to disasters and emergencies and hard times in American history. To create policy that would drive religious organizations from the public square or not permit their vigorous engagement in solving these kinds of problems is a direction we simply don't want to go in America.
Jennifer, in your opinion, what does inherent human dignity have to do with religious freedom?
Well, it's important that individuals be able to pursue truth, and to have the freedom to do that means that we have got to grant religious freedom. And this is what the idea of religious freedom recognizes, that inherent moral responsibility of each individual, and to pursue the truth. And our nation's recognition of religious liberty has done that in our history. This is what other nations are currently striving for, and what many religious minorities are yearning for in places where they do not have religious freedom. So as we've seen, for instance, the Arab Spring sweep through the Middle East and North Africa, there is a yearning there for the same kind of freedoms that we enjoy here in the United States.
Why don't you paint for us a picture of a healthy relationship between religious freedom and federal institutions?
Well, it's important, first of all, that federal policy not do anything that would encroach on civil society, including religious congregations' ability to have a full range of motion in the public square, to participate in public debates about the moral direction of our country. It's important that we preserve both institutional and individual freedom to express religious viewpoints, to express arguments that are derived from a religious principle. We need to be guarding both the institutional we need to be guarding both the individual religious freedom, but also the institutional religious freedom. And that means that it's important for federal policy not to infringe on a religious organization's ability to run its operation, its social service operation, or a church ministry in accordance with its convictions and beliefs. And that means the freedom to hire according to religious principles, and the freedom to serve according to the beliefs of that congregation. So these are critical aspects of what religious freedom includes. It is the freedom to worship, but also the freedom to participate in the public square and in public debates.
But why should religious liberty be valuable to all groups, even the radical secularist and the atheist camp?
Religious freedom goes deeply to freedom of conscience and freedom of speech and freedom of association. And these are all things that Americans as a whole should hold dear as we seek to maintain and to fulfill the mission of the founders, the vision of the founders, with regard to this great American experiment in ordered liberty. Religious freedom is fundamental to our whole set of freedoms that we enjoy as Americans.
Jennifer Marshall, thank you for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
You are welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Patchwork heritage is a strength, not a weakness. We are a nation of Christians and Muslims, Jews and Hindus, and non-believers. And that diversity can bring difficult debates. But time and again, the American people have demonstrated that we can work through these issues and stay true to our core values and emerge stronger for it. So it must be and will be today.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to AmericaIsRising.com, 800-255-4199, AmericaIsRising.com. New York, Bill, W-O-R, go ahead, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi, Michael. At one point, I was an apprentice to a Lakota shaman. And the way he expressed the religions is that they're all like spokes on a wheel leading to the center, which is the...
Wait. You're talking about me. I'm the one who originated that 10, 15 years ago. Don't you remember the healing wheel?
Well, you know, I did hear you say that, but this Lakota shaman that I worked with, had.
Hold on, wait a minute. This is very intriguing. How long ago did you work with this Lakota shaman?
Back in around from 1998 to about 2004 when he passed away.
He must have robbed it from me, because I've been talking about the healing wheel, where each religion is a spoke that leads to the center. He must have been listening to the show. You sure he was truly a Lakota? That he didn't just come from Lake Ronkonkoma? Was he an actual Native American?
Yes, his name was Grandfather Wallace Black Elk.
And all right, so he was a Lakota. So he must have listened to me on talk radio, because I talked about the healing wheel, where the center was God, and each spoke was a different religion led to the center of God. Maybe I stumbled upon it myself. It could be that in my research for Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, I stumbled upon that. I don't recall it, but I'm willing to accept the fact that maybe the Lakota Sioux did see it that way. Now, was that unique to this man, or was it unique to the religion, to the Lakota?
It was unique from this man teaching me. This is what he taught me. Now, on another,
and he must have listened to the radio show, because I'm telling you the truth, he didn't discover that on his own. He was probably a smart guy, and he listened to the Savage Nation to get his ideas. Okay, but let's put that aside. I actually still believe that. It's the only way to explain all the religions on Earth and not put anyone down or put anyone up. In other words, if people are seeking God, what do you care how they're getting there?
Exactly. And
right?
Another,
isn't that more accepting of your fellow man, and in a sense more Christian, to accept that people will find God in their own way? Can't you leave them alone? Why must they follow your way? I don't understand that.
Yeah, and that's what leads to, he said, that's what leads to fanaticism. If you look at,
well, I'm going to tell you something else, Bill. We agree on that. I'll tell you something else. Like, when you can get so fanatic with religion, there are Orthodox Jewish people who follow, I don't know how many hundreds of commandments a day. You go into a temple, do you realize how wrapped up they are in specific rituals? A way to wrap this, a way to wrap that, a way to bend this, a way to bend that, they have to wear this, they have to wear that, turn this way, turn that way. If you turn that way, you're going to get condemned to hell. God's going to punish you if you pick up your foot to the right, if you turn your head to the... How can you live that way?
Yeah, those are just all rituals. Those are a way to get you to the great mystery. But they're only rituals, and people get hung up in the rituals and forget the great mystery, which the mind can never totally grasp anyway.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful. I totally agree with you. They forget the great mystery. That's right. When you get caught up in the ritual, it's almost a way of bringing your mind away from thinking about the so-called great mystery or the abyss. Most people don't even want to think about it, so they think about the ritual in order to forget the fact. It's like looking at the bagel, not the whole.
Exactly. And at one point he said, if you look at, say, in the Christian religion of Christ, you never see him pointing to his head. He's always pointing to his heart, because that's the only place where you're truly going to find the answer. The mind will never comprehend the mind of the Creator or why things happen, and we try to explain it with our minds. It's impossible.
Well, you know, when I started talking about religion on this show, and I don't want to get sidetracked because I'm having a good time, I remember saying to I think it was Reverend Forbone, when we had that great debate here on the Savage Nation. It's a great one. I lost a lot of people who didn't like me after that. I got letters for years afterwards where people were putting me down and all of that, because I didn't accept Jerry Falwell's view of reality, that is, that only Christians can go to heaven. But I was shocked that Jerry Falwell said that. And then we debated it afterwards, and there were many other Christian theologians who called and said he was wrong, that they don't agree that only Christians can go to heaven. So I thought it was a rather narrow view of what heaven is, and a rather narrow view of Christianity, incidentally. But having said that, I thought about the Native Americans who had been on in North America, for example, for at least 10,000 years prior to the arrival of the European. Is that fairly accurate geologically and anthropologically, about 10,000 years?
I believe so, yes.
All right. Well, I'm a trained anthropologist with an actual master's degree before my PhD in another field. It's 10,000 years of living here in North America. You're telling me in these 10,000 years there were no saintly human beings and no devils? That they were all pagans and heathens and deserved to go to hell? I don't want to accept that. I want to accept that in any generation, at any time, amongst any religion, amongst any people, amongst any ethnic group, there are saints and sinners.
Absolutely, yes.
Now, is that, in your mind, my view, is that your view? Do you share that way of looking at people?
Well, my view is that there's actually this whole notion of heaven and hell are a little bit misguided. The idea of reincarnation, in that we're eternal beings that constantly are evolving into new and different beings, And really, he's just a
guy. Well, let's talk about that. How do we know that's true? In other words, what's the good of it if we don't remember the last being? I've talked about that on the show. Let's say there is truth to your idea that there is reincarnation. What's the good of it if you don't remember who you were in the last incarnation, whether you were a mouse or an eagle? If you don't remember it, what's the good of it? In other words, you go before God and he says, you are a rotten, stinking lawyer. You robbed people. You pretended you were a good guy. You are not a good guy. So you're not coming back as a human being. You're coming back as a cockroach in Poland in a latrine in 1936. So you mean for that 1 second you get to know what it is?
No. That's the idea is look at it in terms of a classroom, that it's a learning process. Like, say, Adolf Hitler. He comes back to learn his lesson by having to relive some of the horror that he...
He should only come back as one of the Jewish children who was thrown up in the air for bayonet practice, maybe through eternity. That would be about the appropriate punishment for Adolf Hitler. He should be thrown in the air 60 million times through eternity and caught on a bayonet and scream. I mean, can you ever believe there'd be a just punishment for what he did to this world?
Well, he will have to relive that in some way.
I wish to God that were true. I only wish to God that were true. But I don't really believe that, because we have Hitler alive again now. His name is Ahmadinejad. This is a reincarnation of absolute and pure evil on a political scale. We had him in Haman in ancient Iran. We had him in the Middle Ages. We had him in Hitler. And I'm not Nostradamus. I'm telling you, Ahmadinejad is a repeat of history all over again. The man is saying what he's going to do. The man is going to do it, and no one stops him. How do you explain that? How do you explain that the world doesn't stop Hitler when he's back again? Instead, he comes to New York, and they afford him all of the dignity of a president of the United States. How is that possible?
Well, it's another lesson in fanaticism. How do we stand up to fanaticism?
Well, we don't stand up to fanaticism. We have a government that is kowtowing to fanaticism. Especially, it's gotten so bad under Obama that they treat him with more dignity than they do someone who's actually trying to save America. How do you explain that? How do you explain the fact that thousands and thousands of people who were FBI agents cheated on their exam? How did that happen under Obama?